Peter, don't get caught.
Thank you.
6 o'clock, son. If you need to worry, you need to hustle.
Thank you.
I'm going to call to a meeting, call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council. This is Monday, September 17, 2018. We have some seats that are vacant. If you are intending to stay, please make yourselves comfortable. Welcome to the city of Grover Beach. And with that, please stand with us for a moment of silence in honor of the, to remember the victims of the Hurricane Florence in the Carolinas and the Eastern Seaboard. Thank you. Please remain standing as we do our flag salute. Please place your hands over your heart and follow me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson.
Here.
Councilmember Shaw.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Here.
And Mayor Schultz.
Present. Thank you, Donna. We are all accounted for. With that, we'll go to our closed session announcements. And City Attorney, can you cover that for us, please?
Yes, Council. On August 20th, Council had a closed session regarding conference legal counsel and existing litigation pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D1. This was in relationship to Selbeach Enterprises versus City of Grover Beach case. The plaintiff in that particular case had given a proposal to the city for purposes of settling this matter, subject to everybody carrying their own cost. I proposed, pursuant to your direction, subsequent to that meeting, in acceptance of that proposal, subject to that condition. They agreed upon that, and so in light of Government Code 54957.1A3, I'm reporting out the fact that the case has been dismissed. So you are now out of the lawsuit.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney. And before we go any further, I want to just make sure if you are here and you want to speak on an item, please fill out one of the blue forms. You can either hand them to the fire chief or you can hand them to the city manager or city clerk. So with that, we're going to move on to our agenda review this evening. This is when the council review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or make any announcements regarding any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
No.
Okay. Someone prepared to make a motion?
I'll move that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on that motion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we will proceed with the agenda as presented by staff. I believe there are extra copies on the table at the back of the room. So we're going to move right into our ceremonial calendar tonight. This is item number one. This is a pledge to make a smart commute choice during rideshare week of October 1st through the 5th, 2018. And I believe Mr. Williamson is still here, correct?
Still here. Evening, Mayor Schultz, council members, Grover Beach. My name is Peter Williamson. I'm the employer outreach coordinator at the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. SLOCOG is our region's agency for transportation planning and funding. I coordinate the commuter program, which works with 47 employers throughout the county to encourage employees to make smart commute choices. We also have programs for our county's seniors, persons with disabilities, K-12 parents, teachers, schools, and for our travelers through SLO 511. And I'm here today to fill you in on what's coming up for Rideshare Week, October 1st through 5th, as well as National Walk School Day, which is October 10th. So for Rideshare Week, we are let's see if I can get this controller to work. Before I kick into the slide, technical difficulties. Anybody a pro with this? Some technical expertise on the way. Okay. So for Rideshare Week, we'll once again be asking the community of Grover Beach to pledge to do their part between now and October 5th. You'll see a super duper URL up here. We can do the next slide forward sort of method if that's the way to go. There we go. So simple. All right, here we go. So between now and October 5th, pledge to do your part, whether you drive alone, maybe you have a varying schedule, and then that's necessary, or you try to carpool regularly. Just take a minute to consider what you can do this year. You can post a carpool opportunity at the Waze Carpool app. Those are those cool items that you got there from our partners over at Waze. It's the app. A lot of people are familiar with it, and it allows for flexible carpooling. You can refer a friend, say, hey, nudge, nudge, you should do this. I can't. You can share a picture of your smart commute, track your smart commute choices, et cetera. There's a lot of options. And I'm going to tell you how you can win up to $700. Anybody want to win $700? Like one person in this room likes money. All right. Visit supercommuter.org, and you can identify how you want to get involved with the pledge, and it's going to explain how you do some of those selected actions. Also left some action sheets here. Anyone that you take is a chance to win $100. So we like to say it's a chance, you know, up to $700 that you could win, which is fantastic. So we'll switch over to the next one here. As always, we have multiple events at work sites throughout the county. In South County, we already did one over at Arroyo Grande Hospital, very successful. We have an opening if there's another employer in South County that wants to do another event between now and October 5th. The general community is also encouraged to join us for that kickoff event there, a parking takeover in downtown San Luis Obispo on the 28th, so next Friday at 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Come play some yard games, enjoy some free appetizers, and a chance at 50% off your dinner from Big Sky. You shouldn't have to visit Europe to go to that plaza and enjoy that coffee kind of experience we all visualize, right? We can do it right here, so come see what that looks like. More parks, less parking, and kick off Rideshare Week with us. And then the next slide here, and you see the events continue, 14 between now and October 5th, MindBody, Costco, et cetera. So next slide there. All right. Rideshare, we like to say it's not a mode, it's not a mode, it's a movement. Right, and when it comes to mode, though, our various partners do kick in some Rideshare Week exclusives, like free bus rides from Slow Transit, Tri-Transit Thursday in Morro Bay on Morro Bay Transit, free Tri-Transit passes from RTA, via me at SoCog, you can try the bus out, $100 off your first month of van pooling from Enterprise Rideshare, free month lease from Bolt About as a giveaway item from boltabout.com, it's electric bikes. Pretty cool in the area right now. So keep an eye on supercommuter.org to see what other partnerships are happening. We'll switch to the next slide here. So this year's Rideshare Week Challenge at iRideshare.org has categories for employers, community teams, as well as individuals. As an employer, you can compete in one of the three size categories. For the team challenge, you can grab up to 10 friends, coworkers, family, community members, etc. And all the challenge options, including the individual category, based on how many single-occupant vehicle miles traveled, you can reduce. In other words, you can bike to your morning coffee, take the bus to an event, walk to lunch, bike to a winery on the weekend. Any of these things would count, or you could be vanpooling to work. Log those trips, and all the vehicle miles you reduce will help your team or yourself win those challenges. And if you win, we have some pretty cool title awards, sort of like this. We'll go back one. Sort of like the Stanley Cup, right? You remember this from Bike Month. You win it this year, defend it next year. And then for the employer categories, we're doing the best workplaces for commuters, paid designation, so basically national recognition for the employers that win in those categories. That designation tells potential new hires that you're a workplace that supports alternative transportation choices. And then next slide, last but not least, anyone have kids in the room? Are there any kids in Grover Beach? A few parents, good. Good to see that. Not very many in San Luis Obispo. So mark your calendar. October 10th is National Walk to School Day, and I encourage you to get out with your kids, walk them to school. There's going to be a lot of prizes, giveaways, food. There's many grants available for schools that want to participate, so if your school is not or you are not sure, definitely reach out to our public information officer. It's PIO@slowcog.org, and her name is Anna. We want to get your school involved. Next slide. And so whether you're all advocating for alternative transportation, you're actively seeking smart commute choices maybe, or you're walking with your kids on October 10th, you're making our community a better place, and we appreciate it. Any questions before I take off here?
Let's see if there's any questions. Any questions of Mr. Williamson?
Well, I remember in years past, and you may have covered it and I missed it, that you used to sometimes have bikes available to people who didn't have bikes but wanted to participate. Is that still something you can do?
Yeah, there are, so Boltabout does do, like, if you're not satisfied sort of thing, so you can get in there 2 weeks, and you're like, it wasn't for me. So there's some options like that, but nothing official. I think they had a lot of bikes go out, and then they didn't make a lot of sales. So I don't know, one of those things. But there's a lot of great bike resources, like the Bike Kitchen, where you can get a bike for, like, $20, fix it up for another $5, and you're on your way. Mm. I'd be happy to share those resources with anyone.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for the presentation.
Thanks, Mayor Schultz.
Okay. So before we go any further, I didn't talk to the fire chief before. I know we've got quite a few people in the council chambers and just want to make sure we're okay from a fire occupancy standpoint. I got a thumb up so we can keep moving. Fantastic. Okay. So we're going to move on to public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. So this is your opportunity to speak to this council with anything within our jurisdiction that is not on the agenda. I have five, looks like. Is this Mary Jean Sage?
Good evening, council members and mayor. My name is Mary Jean Sage, and I'm here representing the Healthy Communities Work Group in San Luis Obispo County. And I'm bringing you an invitation to be our guest at our upcoming community workshop on health and housing, Building the Connection. A subcommittee of Heal Slow, Healthy Communities Work Group is a group of community members and volunteers representing organizations throughout San Luis Obispo County, including Public Health, SLOCOG, ACPD, the Health Commission, Environmental Health, City of Slow Planning Commissioners, Slow County Planning Department itself, Caltrans, HomeShare Slow, CAPSLOW, and Cal Poly Regional Planning Department. The group's focus is the impact of the built environment on health, and our group reviews proposed land development projects that come in through our county planning department, commenting on health impacts that we identify. In recent years, our group has also begun collaborating with local jurisdictions, providing comments on proposed projects and general plan updates. And I think we just recently received something from Grover Beach, actually. We have identified housing as a significant need locally. Safe, affordable, adequate housing is the cornerstone of healthy communities. We know that housing enables people to build roots in their community, to get to know their neighborhoods, build a social network of support, and become civically engaged. The workshop will be held Thursday, October the 4th, from 1 to 6, and is being held at the Vets Hall in SLO. Our keynote speaker will be Allison Albee from Change Lab Solutions, whose talk is entitled Under One Roof, How Comprehensive Healthy Housing Strategies Improve Health Outcomes. A local panel will follow, and they will discuss what is happening locally to connect health and housing. The panel includes housing leaders throughout San Luis Obispo County. The event will end with a reception, a little wine tasting, and time for mingling. The event is free, but we do ask that you register in advance so that we know to expect you. I have some flyers, which I will leave with your staff, about how you would register. And we do hope to see some of you there.
Thank you for those comments. Mm-hmm. So I've got Robert McLeod followed by Nora O'Donnell.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm Robert McLeod. I work for Service Employees International Union, and I'm a member of the bargaining team that is representing your employees in your current negotiations, and those are the folks with the purple shirts out here. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. The difference between what your employees are asking for and what the city is offering is as little as $200 to $300 per year for most of our employees. With so little separating us, why don't we have an agreement? The fact that we don't have an agreement is even more confounding when you consider, one, at no time in over 6 months of negotiations has the city indicated that there is a financial inability to grant the employee's request. Two, The consumer price index is currently running at about 3.9%. The city is offering employees 1.5%, meaning that employees at best are having a 2.4% reduction in their purchasing power. 3, the city is providing no additional medical insurance contribution in any of the 3 years of its contract. Possible increases in those costs could exceed the value of the proposed salary increases, causing a further reduction in employees' standard of living. 4, other city employees have been granted 2 and 3% salary increases this year, while the city is offering only 1.5% to our members, even though many of the employees getting higher raises make from 3 to 4 times as much as our members and receive up to another $20,000 per year in additional compensation for overtime. 5, the city acknowledges it may have a significant increase in revenue in this and coming years due to cannabis sales, but wants employees to agree to 3 years of financial losses. So back to the question of why we don't have an agreement. The answer is that in spite of the facts I pointed out and others, your council has not given your negotiating team authority to achieve a fair agreement. You have an opportunity to correct that tonight. Please show the employees who provide excellent service to citizens and visitors to Grover Beach that their efforts are appreciated. Thank you.
Nora O'Donnell, followed by Raymond Hernandez.
Shorter. Good evening. Honorable Mayor Schultz, Mayor Pro Tem Lee, Council Members Nichols, Peterson, and Shaw, thank you so much for allowing me to speak today. I am speaking on behalf of myself and also my fellow members of the local SEIU 620. We are the boots-on-the-ground employees who conduct most of the day-to-day city operations of maintaining facilities and parks, interacting with city customers, whether it be discussing their plans for improving their homes, construction plans, concerns about their water usage, code enforcement, setting up water service, purchasing a bus pass, signing up for a class, reserving a facility, and a myriad of other services that would actually take up more time than I have right now. I have been employed by the city of Grover Beach for almost 16 years. I tell people all the time that I love my job, and I do. And since I work in parks and recreation, I jokingly say that I get paid to play. I consider myself to be a team player and believe strongly that Grover Beach is a wonderful city to work for and come to every day. Sorry, got to switch pages. I hear all the time from the public at the concerts and other special events, from our city manager, my direct supervisor and coworker, and also from our Parks and Recreation, and even you, our esteemed city council members, that I do a great job and that collectively you appreciate what I contribute to my job in the city. In fact, I hear that about all of our employees, and I believe it. We do a great job. We've been at our jobs long enough to know them backwards and forwards, to be able to put a positive face on the entity that is the city of Grover Beach. So why am I here to speak to you today? Well, and here comes a part that might be uncomfortable to hear, because no matter how many times someone says you're doing a great job, it doesn't really feel heartfelt when we've gone year after year with small incremental pay increases, when we've made concessions for the good of the city, when we've given over and over of our time, our expertise, our steadfast approach to doing business, and have contributed mightily to the success of the city and how it functions, but are not feeling that our pay and benefits are keeping up with the rising cost of living in the place that we all love. The city has increased the fee structure to keep up with the cost of living, yet now why not our pay? For most of us, we've reached the top step of increases, so the only increase that we can hope for is the negotiated percentages when we go to the bargaining table. And now we are at impasse. I'm here to ask you to end this impasse, come back to the bargaining table, and in good faith, really evaluate how appreciative you are of the jobs we do, and show us in our paychecks just a bit more of that appreciation. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Very good. Raymond Hernandez, followed by Yesenia Villarreal.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, City Council, and staff. My name is Ramon Hernandez. Most of you know me as Raymond, for I am an employee of the City of Grover Beach Public Works Department. I have been employed with the city for 37 years, 5 part-time and 32 full-time. And I'm also a proud member of Local 620. I have come here this evening to ask why, as a council, could not come to the table and bargain with us faithfully with our proposed. Excuse me, I haven't been this nervous before since I've asked my father-in-law for his daughter's hand in marriage, so give me a minute here. That was presented to you by us members of SEIU 620. We as general employees have served a total of 255 years, all of us standing here, experience for the city. Office crew members of the SEIU 620 deal with the public on a daily basis, from receiving payment from numerous things to rental of facilities, and also deal with lots of other questions and comments that they come from the public. Public Works Department crew has deals with the public and also upset transients. For example, when they are awakened and asked to vacate the facility because we have to clean it, they get very upset. So therefore, we call our local law enforcement to take care of it. When we do maintenance cleanup in the parks, we encounter a lot of different things that some people aren't aware of. Hypodermic needles, human waste, lots of other stuff that I don't care to find in the morning. We are out there representing our city to keep it clean, looking nice, and make it a safe place for our community. And I believe we all are doing a great job in all departments. Past years we have, when it was time to bargain, you, the city council, have not been fair. Let's not forget, in the past years, we as employees have sacrificed with 3 years of furloughs and no pay increase. We all stood together to pull together for the city. We feel, as members of Local 620, you did not come to the table faithfully. You are wanting to give us what you want, but we're asking for what we want to be fair. We were willing to come back to the table to negotiate a fair deal for us members of 620. Thank you very much.
And Yesenia Villagal.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor Schulz and City Council. My name is Yesenia Villarreal. I am a member of SEIU. I have been serving the community of Grover Beach for 23 years. I started as a young girl. I'm a mother of two young boys that are in school. I live in Santa Maria and commute to Grover Beach daily, Monday through Friday. The cost of living in the Central Coast is very expensive, as you may know. My last cost of living increase was on July 1st, 2017, a 2.5% increase. The general employees, SEIU, and I are here today due to the fact that we are out of contract with the city and we have yet to reach an agreement with the city of Grover Beach. We are here this evening, the general employees, SEIU, who are in the front line of city services. We ask to be treated with respect and equality and desire a fair contract, as other bargaining groups have succeeded. There are 11 general employees in SEIU that have dedicated at least 12 to 32 years of service to the city of Grover Beach citizens. I have seen many employees come and go through the 23 years that I've been employed here. However, we are still here, dedicated to our jobs and the community and the citizens of Grover Beach. The employee morale is the lowest of all time that I have seen in the 23 years of my employment with the city of Grover Beach. City Council, I ask you today, what will you do to make things fair and equal for the general employees, SEIU? How will you take care of the general employees, SEIU, that represent your city of Grover Beach? Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. I don't have any other speaker request forms for public comment. Sharon?
I feel sort of insignificant after hearing some of that, but I just had some concerns on the status of some things that we have been discussing for some time, and I thought I would raise them tonight. I better put on my glasses first. I know at one time we have talked about, and I'm assuming it's ongoing, about inventory of all the city properties and facilities, inspecting them, evaluating them, and being able to plan what needs to be done, and I wondered what the status of that might be. Also, I'm concerned that I'm not seeing any play equipment at Ramona Park. And I thought we had decided that, but has that been set aside for some reason? Also, what is the status of the public parking behind the Grover Beach Post Office? And then also the status of the sign ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward. Let me close this. And, well, I want to do this just to make sure everyone understands that we treat employees fairly and with respect. And I can tell you in my 14 years of service, we've done that. And so, city manager, I want to make sure that all the information is out for the public that's either here or who are watching at home so that everyone has both sides of the information.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. First, I'll reiterate your comments that we do very much value our employees who are on the front line serving our community with distinction each and every day. I will convey that the city has been in good faith negotiations with SEIU for many months, beginning in March. We did have a final offer presented to SEIU in July before impasse was declared. We haven't had the bargaining table over this time period. As part of the process, we did a salary survey, as we do with every bargaining process, and the survey indicated that compensation for most positions within this bargaining group were at or above the market for other comparable agencies. So this is a key part of our negotiations to really look at achieving market equity with other positions and other agencies around the area. The city is willing to grant annual cost of living adjustment over a 3-year period as part of this bargaining process. And this is in contrast to other agencies in the area that are looking at either pay freezes or potential concessions or cutbacks, but we did feel this was appropriate given the market conditions we face. And lastly, I'll mention that the city is addressing market equity issues on a case-by-case basis for certain positions. As an example, the engineering tech position on your agenda this evening came as a result of the process of looking at business needs and making a recommendation for adjusting the compensation based on market equity. So again, that's an example of where we do approach these issues on a case-by-case basis to achieve market equity.
And I know that we can't get into details tonight because these have typically been negotiations in confidence, and so I appreciate you at least sharing some of that information.
Thank you.
Okay. Also, I think Sharon brought up some really good items, and maybe we can give the community an update as well on, I think, the inventory of city facilities, the play equipment at Ramona Garden Park, parking, which is a combination of public-private parking behind the post office, and then I missed the fourth that she had brought up. Did anyone else?
It was the sign ordinance.
Oh, sign ordinance, that's correct. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Sure, I'd be glad to, and actually we have quite a bit to report out on each of these different items. On the inventory of city facilities, I will say that the council prioritized maintenance of community facilities and assets as one of your goals for the last 2 years, and that has really driven a lot of the work we've done at the staff level. The Park and Rec and Beautification Commission did a facility matrix, as they have each and every year. That information really looked at each of our facilities and gave the commission's assessment as to what needed to be done in what priority order. That went to the council earlier this spring and was part of your CIP and budget discussion that helped to inform certain projects that are in this year's budget, including 16th Street Park, Mentone Basin Park, the Ramona Garden Park, both the facility improvements inside the community center, the restrooms, but also the playground coming up as a future phase. I'm pleased to mention that we've just about wrapped up the first phase of the Ramona Community Center improvements, new flooring, carpeting, new exterior painting. The next phase will be kicking off here shortly with new lighting and improving the outside restrooms. The playground is part of the broader plan, but that's coming up as a later phase. It's planned for fiscal year 19-20 at this point, with the idea that we needed to improve our deferred maintenance first and then look at expansion from there. With regards to the parking lot behind or at the Ramona Square parking lot, and in particular the post office, your council did identify a project for this fiscal year and funded it in our capital budget to improve the surface of the parking lot behind the post office. Our staff is working on that as we speak. We anticipate having a contract out for bid this fall that will improve that parking lot as a first phase of what will eventually be a public-private partnership to improve the rest of the parking lot. But we wanted to start off with the post office lot first, and again, credit your council for putting in the funds for that this fiscal year. And with the sign ordinance, that has been in the works. We have a draft ordinance that we've identified at the staff level. We're identifying a schedule of when to bring that to the Planning Commission and also get outreach from the business community. We're also doing this in conjunction with the parking standards update, which has been a key area of need as well. And that is planning to also come forward in the time period. So both of these are moving forward. At this point, we are looking at the parking standards probably coming first because of the continued pressure we feel from development opportunities and residents regarding parking needs across the city.
Okay, very good. And all right. And you had talked about the signs a little bit.
Yeah, again, the sign ordinance is something that I think we're planning for when we can bring that forward to the commission for a recommendation to the council, but that will be coming late 2018, early 2019, okay. And I think it'll be a significant step forward from where we are now.
Very good. Thank you, sir. With that, we're going to move on to our consent agenda tonight. This is an agenda where we typically take routine items as a group, and we have, looks like, several items on consent this evening. I'm not going to read them all by title, but it looks like we've got at least, nine? Do any members of the council have questions on the items or wish to pull any item from consent?
I have nothing.
No? Okay. I was thinking we should pull item number 8. I think it would be good for the community to have an oral report on the things that we're doing to improve and upgrade our police department. I think that would be beneficial. So as customary, when we pull an item from consent, we put it on the end of the agenda, and I'm sure the chief's not going anywhere anytime soon, right? All right. So with that, someone prepared to make a motion on all the items under consent with the exception of item 8.
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda minus item number 8.
Second.
Okay, there is a motion and a second. If there is no additional discussion on that motion, maybe a roll call vote, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes.
Yes. So that motion carries 5-0, and we will put item number 8 at the end of the agenda. So we're going to keep moving, and we still have quite a few people who are joining us tonight, and we still have quite a few items on our agenda. So let's move into, well, we have no public hearing tonight, so we are now going to move into our regular business. This is item number 11. Anyone here for item number 11? Trust me, I got the stack. Welcome to Grover Beach. All right. So this is a potential city position on the countywide measure G18. And at this point, I'm going to turn the floor over to City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Just a very brief presentation outlining this measure. So just for background, back on July 23rd, there were numerous public speakers who were asking the council to consider taking a position on Measure G18. There were speakers on both sides of the issue, both for and against. At the conclusion of the comments, the council did ask staff to bring back an item for the council to get more information on Measure G18 and to consider taking a potential city position on this countywide measure. I will note that this measure was placed on the ballot through a citizens initiative process. It was not placed by a governing body, but it came from citizens. And also I'll note that the full text of the measure, the fiscal impact statement, the impartial analysis that was developed by the county are all located on the county election website, and also we had them included as attachments to your staff report this evening. So So just some background, Measure G18 would amend various county codes and plans, including the general plan, the local coastal program, and the county code, to prohibit a couple different items. One is well stimulation treatments and new petroleum extraction in unincorporated areas. So this does not apply to cities, to incorporated cities, but to unincorporated areas throughout the county. It's important to note that the measure does permit existing petroleum extraction as what are called non-conforming uses. So it kind of locks those uses in place. It states that they can't get bigger, they can't increase, they can't intensify, but it continues the current use at the current operation. It does, however, prohibit all well treatment, well stimulation treatment, including so-called fracking, that enhances the recovery of petroleum at these sites, even at existing operations. So this is one item that is prohibited should this measure be adopted or approved by voters. The County Council has indicated that there is some degree of uncertainty regarding the legality of Measure G18 that I wanted the Council to be aware of from the County Council's standpoint. This has to do with the governance of the deep underground drilling operations versus surface level regulations. The county can regulate surface use as part of its land use regulations, but state and federal law may indeed govern what happens below the surface. So there is some degree of uncertainty, shall we say, that the county council did point out with this measure. Also, the measure does require the county to tender any defense in litigation. So should points of the measure be challenged regarding takings, regarding this federal versus state versus local distinction regulation, the county would defend each and every one of those matters in court. So the fiscal impact that was estimated by the Auditor Controller's Office did state that it's frankly difficult to estimate what the overall fiscal impact would be with this measure. There are a lot of variables, including market volatility with the oil and gas industry, the effects of restricting production and how that would relate to overall costs, as well as the possibility of environmental damage from current sites, the impacts to current employees. There are roughly 30 to 70 jobs that are currently in this industry in our county today, and what impacts this would have to those jobs are uncertain. Also, again, the cost of potential litigation, what this could mean for the county in defending these cases. Just to note that the supporters of this measure are led by a group called the Coalition to Protect San Luis Obispo. This group does cite a variety of different factors in the measure: water quality protection, the protection of health and safety across the community, as well as what they point to as long-term economic impacts and benefits of having further restrictions on the industry. The opponents are led by a group called No on Measure G, Stop the Oil and Gas Shutdown. And this group does cite the potential shutdown of existing production within our county, increased dependence that could come about with foreign oil if the measure was adopted, and significant economic impacts and uncertainty regarding the possible measure adoption. Also note for the council's benefit that this measure does not affect offshore drilling, offshore oil and gas production. This is just onshore production. And I'll note that the council did take action back in March, adopting a resolution opposing the expansion of offshore oil drilling as part of a federal plan for doing so. So again, what's before the council is to receive information about the measure this evening and to consider whether to take a city position on this ballot item. If you did wish to do so, then staff would plan to bring back a resolution to the council for your adoption on October 1st. Glad to take your questions and comments.
Okay, very good. Let me see if there's any questions of staff.
I have Mary? One. Yeah, okay. And I'm sorry I didn't ask you this before. Have other cities come out and taken a position yet? And if so, which ones? And what was their position?
At this time, I am not aware of any cities that have taken formal positions, either supporting or opposing Measure G18 or declining to take such a position at this time.
Okay. Do we know if any are pending or?
I have not heard of any at this time.
Okay.
Anyone else?
Mayor Pro Tem?
Two quick questions, one of which is on the impartial analysis. It says, the second sentence says, if 51% of qualified voters vote to approve the measure, and then it goes on. And so for Mr. Hale, I don't know if this is a conjecture or not, but is this not a 50% plus one? Is this actually required to have 51% of voter support in order to be approved? So that is on page 91 of our coordinated.
My understanding would be a simple majority vote that would pass it.
Okay, gotcha. So then the second question actually is probably more of a substantive question. If we were to take a position this evening, and as City Manager Bronson mentioned, there is the potential for litigation. If we do take a position, does that subject the city to being potentially named as a participant in any legal action?
Absolutely not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Those are all the questions we have for now. All right, so I'm going to open this up to the public. I've got about 20 speaker request forms. So I'm going to couple of things as before we move forward. We're going to give everyone 2 minutes. I'd ask that if someone has made the point for you, just reiterate your agreement with them. We are lucky that we live in a country in which we can express our views and our opinions, and we do it in a respectful manner, and we're asking everyone to do that tonight. Whether you agree with someone's position or not, I'm hoping that you will receive that information and allow them to finish their thoughts. And we'll get through this quickly, so what I will do is I will call two names. First person, please come to the lectern, and the second person, please be ready to move forward. And so we'll see how we get through this, and there'll be some more discussion and questions from the council. So we're going to start with Gene Quayle. Gene will be followed by Patrick Vowell.
Thank you. My name is Gene Quayle. I've been a resident of Grover Beach for 30 years. I urge the City Council to remain neutral on this issue in G18. The citizens of Grover Beach do not need some vocal environmentalist to set city policy. Oil production can be done safely without harming the environment. Our nation needs to be energy independent, and we do need oil. Just shutting down oil is stupid. Our citizens in this city are intelligent enough to make their own decisions about oil production and measure G18. Please remain neutral on G18. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Sequel. Patrick Vowell, followed by Jacob. Is it Jacob Lay?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Patrick Vowell, a longtime resident of San Luis Obispo County and currently an environmental specialist for Sentinel Peak Resources, the operator of the Arroyo Grande oil field on Price Canyon Road. Every barrel of oil we produce stays right here in California to provide fuel for our vehicles and power for our homes and our daily lives. California produces enough oil to meet 35% of its gasoline demand right now. And any loss of production won't mean a loss of consumption. It will just mean more imported oil from countries with environmental records that pale in comparison to California, which has some of the strictest and most protective environmental regulations in the world. There's currently a movement to close the Arroyo Grande oil field, along with all county oil and gas production, through County Ballot Measure G coming up in the November election. And make no mistake, despite measure proponents touting that it will continue to allow the field to operate, I can assure you, as can anyone who knows about operating an oil field, the restrictions imposed by this measure will in fact shut us down over the course of the next few years. Please don't help that to happen. Instead, I ask you to please pass a resolution against Measure G and support good jobs and a healthy economy in our county.
Thank you for those comments, Jacob. And Jacob will be followed by Buck Grayson.
Good evening, Mayor and fellow council members. My name is Jacob Long. I've been a resident of SLO County for 30 years. I'll be voting no on Measure G this November. This initiative is a total shutdown of the local oil and gas industry. We'd be jeopardizing over 200 head of household jobs after losing 1,500 jobs with the impending closure of Diablo Canyon. This industry has safely operated for over a century and has provided good-paying jobs for our community. Please respect that this is our county issue and do not take a position on Measure G. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jacob, for correcting the record. That's Jacob Long. Buck Grayson, followed by Robert, I think that's Soden.
Good evening. I'm going to speak straight from the heart. I've been in the oil and gas industry just short of 26 years. I'm a safety specialist now for Sentinel Peak. Done some environmental work for, like I said, for the past 15, 20 years. Measure G has a lot more impact on normal people like myself. It may be just 60 or 70 or 80 jobs that you think of that are directly involved at first, but there may be another 200 behind the scenes nobody knows anything about. Oil and gas industry has been very good to me and my family, helping me raise my three children. There may be some people here who may speak the same way, but the oil and gas industry is very safe. It's part of my job to keep it that way, and there's also plenty of regulations that just keep people going the right way. So I urge you to vote no on Measure G. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Soden, followed by, all right, John, you're going to have to help me when you, John H., you're going to help me when you come up.
Hi there. My name is Robert Soden, and I'm an electrical contractor. I've been applying my trade up and down the Central Coast for the last 30 years. I've worked in many different oil fields. It's been a really good job. It's provided for me and my family. One thing I would like to say is, knowing what's going on in the field, and I'm a third party, I'm just a contractor, but when they say that, you know, to stop the fracking, I do not know personally of any well that has been fracked in the Central Coast for the 30 years that I've been here. So why everybody puts that on the ballot, because it's the buzzword, you know, to try to get it to stop. And if we do impose all these points that are up there, it will decrease our oil field to the point where it will be uneconomical to run. And it's not going to take very long either, just from my views of what I've seen in the last 30 years. So I'm urging you to vote no. Thank you very
much. Thank you, sir. And this is John Hochleitner?
Hochleitner.
I thought I'd give it a try at least.
You did great.
All right, thank you.
Hi, Council. My name is John Hochleitner, and I work with Pacific Petroleum. We're a local company based out of Santa Maria. We have 10 employees that work at the Arroyo Grande field every day, head of household pay people. Worked in the oil field since I got out of high school, and I was 18 for 45 years now. So, enhanced, this is just probably one of the best-run fields. There's never been any fracking up there. Locally in this area, there's never been any fracking. It is, like Sody just said, a buzzword. I'd like you to consider the economic impact we'd have on this county, and it would just start off a little fireball. I'd like to thank you folks for your time. Appreciate
thank you for those comments. Lauren Netzer, followed by Johnny Simpson.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm Lauren Netzer. I'm an environmental compliance technician for SPR. It's my job to see to that the oil fields such as Arroyo Grande are in compliance with California regulations. My family has made a living in the environmental compliance and safety for generations. We see the firsthand care that is taken to produce our natural resource that we use every day. If you walked in my shoes, you'd be proud of this local asset and show it by opposing Measure G.
Okay, Johnny Simpson, followed by Christine Haley.
My name is John Simpson. I've worked in the oil and gas industry for over 22 years. I am a safety specialist and worked at Arroyo Grande field. Of the 200 jobs that you speak of, one of them is mine. I make my house payment, I put my kids through school, and eventually I'll put my daughters through college in this great community. So think of me and think of my family when you take a stance, and I urge you to vote no.
Okay, thank you for those comments. Christine Haley, followed by Ian McCourt.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Christine Haley. I'm director of environmental health and safety for Sentinel Peak Resources. We operate the Arroyo Grande oil field right on Price Canyon Road. It's the largest of the fields and the major producer here in this county. You're going to hear a lot of claims about Measure G. You'll hear them tonight, and you will hear them as the election day nears. The bottom line about Measure G is that it will shut us down. And we take that very personally. You're going to hear from employees and from people that make their living in this industry providing you with oil and gas resources every day. They'll make that point. But I've just said something that's pretty bold. I said this measure is going to shut us down, and you're going to hear even pushback regarding that. I want you to know that, just to put it succinctly, producing oil and gas in California requires that we do routine maintenance on our wells and on our facilities. We have to respond to the rocks. It's not just a stagnant nature. You've got to move your production as the rocks guide you. What does that mean? That means you drill wells over time. As the fluid moves, you move the well pattern with it. This measure seeks to make it unlawful to continue to drill wells and to do common maintenance practices that are the very core of responsible operations. If the authors sought to maintain existing production by what they put down on paper, they missed the mark badly. This will shut us down. Therefore, I appeal to you to think of this in the context of your own adopted economic development strategy. Strategy one was to go after local assets and be supportive of local businesses. No on G is a move to do just that. I really thank you tonight.
So Ian, followed by Jose Barrera.
Hi, Council. My name is Ian Marcourt, and I actually own my house right down the street on Rockaway. I work in the local oil fields, and I have for the last 7 years. And it's been an industry that allows me to afford my house payment on my own. I just got married 2 days ago, and I hope to raise my kids on the Central Coast. And if this passes, there are no other industries in this area that could afford the wages I make, with the exception of Diablo Canyon. And we all know what's happening there. The last thing I'd like to point out is every barrel of oil we don't produce here in California, we import from overseas. California imported more oil from Saudi Arabia last year than anywhere else in the world. Saudi Arabia is so advanced on their human rights, women just got the right to drive last year. So you can either support governments and agencies that don't believe women should have the right to drive, or you could support local high-paying jobs and oil production done in the most environmentally stringent standards in the world. Thank you.
Okay, Jose Barrera, followed by Aaron Henke.
That's a no, in case you couldn't tell.
Well, we can see the shirt.
Hello, council members and mayor. Thank you for having me here today. First of all, I'm going to give every single one of you a fact sheet.
Here, why don't I pass those out so you don't lose all your time? How's that?
My name is Jose Barrera, and I've lived on the Central Coast my entire life. My father is an immigrant from Mexico who became a welder and had managed to live the American dream by providing a head of household job for six of us. My cousin, he works in the oil industry, and he doesn't have a college education. So California is pushing for career technical education, and this is an industry that has provided just that, head of household jobs that don't require a college degree. If we shut down the oil and gas industry, we're going to see a lot of families having to move out of this county and not be able to have the same funds that they had for their loved ones as they once did. So if we notice, there's a huge economic impact that's going to happen if we pass this measure. So I'm urging the council to stay neutral on this measure and consider the families and the economy that's going to be hurt. Thank you.
Thank you for this comment. Aaron, followed by Ryan Servicek.
Mayor Scholz, Council, thank you for your time. I've had a lot of great people here to speak. I'm also a representative, no, on Measure G. In summation, I'll give you a little bit different approach. But this is a shutdown. If Measure G passes, this is a shutdown within 2 to 3 years of an industry that has been here and operated for over 100 years. So what that means is $64 million in total economic output lost, $14-plus million in labor income, over 231 jobs, and a potential for many more millions in legal fees and different things if this were to pass. So if, in addition to that, that means cuts to public safety, so fire services, response times, et cetera. That's why we have firefighters and police officers supporting a no on Measure G position. That also means cuts to education, public schools, along with what's going on with Diablo Canyon, and vital services. That's why we have over 4,000 people that we have in our coalition right now, regular community members, supporting this campaign. It also means a loss, like I said, of over 231 jobs. And that's a conservative estimate. And that's why I'm proud to announce we have, you know, not only the support of small business owners here in our community, but also the Tri-County's labor union. I urge you to either take a no position or stay neutral on Measure G. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Ryan, followed by Madeline Schechter.
Good evening, Mayor and the Council of Grover Beach. Howdy, my name is Ryan Svircek, and I'm a Slo County resident born and raised in Arroyo Grande. I'm speaking here this evening in support of Measure G. Growing up on the Central Coast, I have enjoyed the natural beauty and pristine landscapes that we call home, and I've been lucky enough to explore the very same hills and valleys my family has lived on for three generations, originally coming off of West Ormonde in Price Canyon oil field. Since then, my family has gone on to build a successful life as we hear about job opportunities, and for the past two generations have continued to live here on the Central Coast. Considering these hills to be a lucky place to live and working to find a way to continue living here myself, I have been building my skills as a student at Cal Poly. What I have come here to share tonight is about the possibility of contaminating our water, one of our most important resources, by increasing oil production. I would like to make it clear that I'm not speaking against oil and its plethora of uses, but instead about the trade-off between protecting our most valuable resource, water, and the rest of the community members. When I think about the community and its needs, I can't help but circle back to the importance of water and its impact to all aspects of life and business, especially even to the petroleum industry, and as it requires a great sum of water for its production. Returning to the issue and the severity of our water to our communities, I struggle with the idea of allowing 481 new possibilities and contaminating our most relied upon resource. If the expansion of 481 new oil wells for increased oil production is allowed, it will not be by any malpractice that will be subjecting our community, to poor water quality, but instead the odds that one of those wells could leak into the aquifer. We cannot simply predict the future, however, but increasing the amount of wells which produce 1.2 million toxic gallons a day using massive pumps to drive these chemicals deep into the ground, as described, it is unknown where these mixtures of toxic chemicals will reside. And if, as Arroyo Grande oil field lies above the water table for the five cities in Santa Maria Basin, we are just increasing the odds. These hills and resources like our drinking water are of the utmost importance, and I hope the odds are in our favor. Thank you. And
thank you, Ryan. Madeline Schechter, and Madeline will be followed by Jackson Resnicek.
Hi, good evening, Mayor and Council of Grover Beach. My name is Madeline Schechter, and I'm a third-year environmental management and protection student at Cal Poly. I grew up in Templeton, and I've always loved this county and all the beauty it has to offer, which is why I chose a major that could help sustain the beauty and why I support Measure G. Protecting our groundwater, Measure G is a major step towards protecting the quantity and quality of San Luis Obispo County groundwater. Fracking, expanding oil drilling, and the disposal of toxic wastewater underground all threaten to contaminate our drinking water. As drought has become the new normal, our water resources are precious and need protection, and protecting them is a high priority. In Price Canyon, there is already a plan to drill 481 new oil wells, and with this expansion, groundwater basins are threatened from the Edna Valley to the Santa Maria Basin, which underlies the five cities. In addition, oil well expansion, which uses fracking, acidization, or steam injection, could threaten the entire county. In fact, it's a real possibility, especially with the federal government opening public lands in the National Forest and the Carrizo Plains to fracking. Passage of Measure G would protect San Luis Obispo County before it becomes too late to stop it. Thank you for your time, and I hope you vote yes.
Thank you for those comments. Jackson, followed by Dominique Dashwood.
Good evening, Mayor Schulz and council members. I'm here in support of Measure G. My name is Jackson Resnicek, and I am a fourth-year Cal Poly student living on the Central Coast for the last 4 years. Currently, there is no fracking in Slo County, and we want to keep it that way. Fracking involves the injection of water deep underground. This water is often mixed with secret blends of toxic chemicals, and in the process of fracking, high-pressure injection cracks the underground rock formations, and oil and gases there extracted from it. Millions of gallons of water are used and contaminated in the process of fracking, and it is well documented that it has been a source of drinking water and groundwater contamination in the United States. Don't believe Big Oil promises that they will never do it here, as there are more than 2,000 fracking wells in Kern County, our next-door neighbor. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. Dominique Dashwood, followed by Linda Fielder. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Schultz, Council, City Staff, and residents of Grover Beach. My name is Dominique Dashwood. I am a Cal Poly senior studying environmental management and protection, and tonight I am speaking on behalf of the Coalition to Protect Slo County. Tonight we are asking you to adopt a resolution in support of Measure G, which we provided to you at the last meeting we spoke at on July 23rd. First, Councilmember Shaw, I wanted to answer your question. The City of Slo did adopt a resolution in support of the measure, and there have been no cities that adopted resolutions against the measure. Next, I wanted to apologize for the absence of one of our co-founders, Charles Varney. Fortunately, the Coalition had another major event tonight, and his attendance was needed there, and he has sent you an email explaining this in further detail. I wanted to thank you for placing Measure G on your agenda for discussion. In doing so, you are acknowledging the 20,473 voters who signed this initiative and qualified Measure G for the ballot, many of which were in Grover Beach. The Yes on Measure G campaign stands on truth, transparency, and civil discourse. And by agendizing Measure G and allowing discussion in a public forum, you're helping us achieve this, and I wanted to thank you for that. The highest goal of Measure G is to protect our groundwater quantity and quality. Oil extraction and production, and especially fracking, are extremely water-intensive practices, resulting in massive amounts of toxic wastewater. Those who support the measure do not wish to see a very small group of people profit substantially while jeopardizing the water and quality of life of all of the people in San Luis Obispo County. Next, I wanted to say Measure G is not the oil and gas shutdown, as you have heard many times tonight. The measure was written specifically for this not to happen. We want these people to have their jobs and want to protect their jobs into the future. They have 25 years of proven reserves at the Arroyo Grande oil field. Last, I would like to ask all supporters of Measure G in the audience to stand up tonight. So tonight, I ask you, Council, please listen carefully to both sides, weigh both of the options, and make the decision you believe will best protect and preserve San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Linda Fielder.
My name is Linda Fielder, and I've owned a business in Grover for 40 years. And I believe that this shutdown is going to take away so much from this community, money-wise, it'll never recover from it. That's too many jobs, too much money that'll be lost here. Please consider this. No on G.
Thank you for those comments. So that actually was our last speaker, but let me just make sure that I haven't overlooked anyone. So are you... Come on forward. Only if you promise to fill one of these out when you're done, sir.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I don't care how you vote on this, but I'll tell you one thing. Fracking is not a buzzword. It has destroyed more states and more counties in the United States than anything else. And I worked the oil fields when I was a young man, okay? So I know what their job is. I know how important it is to them. But fracking is not a buzzword. If that's something that you can stop, great. If you can't stop that without the rest of it, that's your opinion. That's your decision you have to make, but it's not a buzzword. It's a fact.
Thank you, Mr. Emery. So with that, I'm going to close this. I see one other hand. Please come forward.
I don't have a slip.
Well, I need you to come forward, grab a slip, and you can fill it out as soon as you finish speaking. I'll just
give it to you after I speak.
Yeah. Well, I have to do this because, you know, the city clerk, we want to make sure that she's happy. She's the most important person in this room.
First of all, I'd like to thank you all, Mr. Mayor and Council, for giving all these people the opportunity to come up here and speak. It's a precious thing that we have in this country. My name is Jim Bagnuta. I live in the city of Rio Grande, and I'm lead operator, Sentinel Peak Resources out of Price Canyon. Been out there 38 years, and my 38 years, I've never seen any fracking going on out there since I've been there for 38 years. Raised a family here, put a daughter through Cal Poly. Love this community. I've ran into the mayor several times. I don't know if he remembers me, but I think that Slo County uses its fair share of petroleum products, whether it be fueling your car, filling an airplane to fly out of the airport, paving asphalt, as we see going on right down the road here, and it would be somewhat considered selfish that we have this natural resource that was blessed to us, and we've been harvesting it for over 100 years to limit that operation, which in turn we would not be contributing back not only to the county, to the state, but to the nation. And to me, I think that would be wrong to do. I mean, Price Canyon has operated very safe for many years throughout my career of being there 38 years, and I'm on the turning end of finishing it up, and I would like to finish it up and see it move forward for some of these younger generations that have moved into positions within the company, and I think they deserve the chance to do what I have had to do. And I'm a little nervous, but I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. So I think with that, I don't see anyone else, any other hands rising, any no one coming forward. I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. First, let me say thank you to everyone for coming up in a respectful manner, stating your positions and allowing each other to complete their thoughts. It certainly helps us when we get to hear both sides, so I wanted to say thank you for that. And with this, we're going to have some discussion here on the council. We do what the council majority moves us to do. And so with that, let me start to my right and see if Councilmember Nichols, if you have any questions of staff or anyone or any comments. We'll just do both.
I would rather wait.
Okay.
See where the discussion is going.
All right. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Okay. Thank you. And I'll reiterate what the mayor said, that I appreciate everyone being here and actually providing we'll call it a civil discourse. So on the item. So obviously it is a very heated debate throughout the course of the county. And I have my own opinions as to how I'm going to vote once I enter into the voting booth, and I will keep those to myself until an appropriate time. But I think we're here to discuss a city position, and I think from that perspective, that may be slightly different than a personal opinion that I would have. So with that being said, I'm supportive of environmental regulation. I'm supportive of economic development. So I'm supportive of definitely protecting water rights and not contaminating water as was represented, but also making sure that there's economic development opportunities. So you're probably going, okay, that's both sides. Great. Thanks for sharing. So with that in mind, so I would be supportive of a discussion towards either a neutral position as a city to allow our community members to say we have an individual consensus point to move forward as an individual with your determination. But as a city, I don't know how we balance the water and environmental concerns against the economic concerns from that. I can see both sides. I know how I'll be voting once I get in there, but I think as a city, I think my first approach would be to present a neutral position on this subject. But I'm obviously open to listen to all of the viewpoints. I've read the documents and willing to have some further discussion on that.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Shaw.
Okay, for those keeping score, I think I had 13-13, or maybe 13-14 on what people wanted.
What are you talking
about? So that's making me even more torn because it was like half and half. I was really concerned when I came in here, and I think I talked to one of the young men about jobs, and I, you know, and it's not the fault of people who are here today, but I can't help but think back to the Phillips 66 discussion, and it just kept hearing the mantra, if you don't allow this, we're all going to lose our jobs. But then, to my knowledge, nobody did. So I'm having a hard time. And that's not your fault, but that is people from the oil industry who stood before me before and said a certain thing, and then it didn't happen. I agree with Jeff that I'm having a hard time because I have my personal opinion, but I am now speaking on behalf of the city, and as people stated tonight, it's very split. But as I read through all the materials that I got today, got over the weekend, but read today, there were just the history of all the accidents and all the terrible things that happened, and I understand that this is not, you're not fracking now and you may never be fracking, and I understand that, but the water injection and the use of the water, and I'm just thinking, if something terrible does happen and I had a chance to vote to stop it and I didn't, I don't know if I could live with myself, so I think I have to go for yes.
Okay, Councilmember Peterson.
Well, I first became interested in this particular, not actually in the no fracking issue, because we are not fracking, but in the water issue back in 2015, and at that point it was an issue of water for the local property owners who have wells there that they're concerned about, and I did a lot of research. And I did check the track record of oil in San Luis Obispo County. And in the 40s, we were the biggest oil producer in the country. More oil shipped out of Avila than anywhere else. Along with that, we've had worse oil-related environmental disasters in this county than anywhere else in the country. And while Sentinel Peak itself has, as far as I'm aware, a clean track record in Price Canyon, we do not have, oil does not have a clean track record in the county. And I won't go into the details of them. You can find them yourselves. On the other side of it, we have real estate rights. The oil production out at Sentinel Peak has been there for 100 years. And there are real estate rights attached with that. And there's some benefits, apart from jobs, but there's some environmental benefits. And this is something we could probably discuss, but it used to be the case historically that you couldn't ride a horse or walk through Price Canyon because it was full of tar. Well, now we can drive through, ride a horse through, ride our bikes through Price Canyon because a lot of that's been pumped out. And personally, I'm kind of glad it was. Whether that's a good environmental position or not, I'm not sure. And I tend to go for environmental solutions. There are concerns attached with steam injection, and I know as I researched in Oklahoma, it's not the fracking that was so much the problem with the causing of lots of little earthquakes. It was actually the steam injection that seemed to be the cause, and that concerns me. But the biggest concern for me as far as water is that we have not studied this little finger of the basin. The county has not done the research. We now have the capability, the technical capability, to figure out how water flows. And there is one individual, and her work was peer-reviewed. There was one individual who did a study, and it showed that water was flowing out of Edna Creek, out of Edna Valley, into the Sentinel Peak area, like Niagara Falls. And that worries me a great deal. So I really want to see the county and our city. We're 2 miles away. It's part of our basin that does run from Arroyo Grande all the way down to Santa Maria and into the five cities. I think it's really important that we do that research. If we don't know where it's flowing and we can know where the water is flowing, then I don't see how we can even make a decision on this without all the information. So for me, one other point, and that is that Sentinel Peak actually probably is more of a water production company than it is an oil production company, because for every gallon of oil, there's 19 gallons of water. And so longer term, if I were that business, I would be planning to get into the water business. So I think that they probably have a long-term plan. No matter how we do it, whether we steam inject or frack, these oil fields won't last forever, even though there is a lot of shale down there that can be accessed. So I think that we'll find a way one way or another with the jobs. We always seem to do that. And my goal really is to understand the facts and then make a well-informed decision. And I don't think we have all those facts yet. However, as others have said here, I speak for the city of Grover Beach. In fact, and that city isn't City Hall. I speak for all of you who live in Grover Beach. And from what I could hear, I didn't count 1313, 1314, but I looked at which of you actually live in Grover Beach and who are the citizens here. And those of you who live here, again, seem split about 50-50. And so I have serious concerns about the water. And ultimately, we can live without oil, but we cannot live without water. And our resources are seriously depleted. So I'm torn, and I'm inclined to think that this really is a decision for each of us as individuals to make in the county. And I don't think I can speak for the community fairly by voting one way or the other, because I've heard it both ways here. So that's where I stand right now.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols.
What they all said.
That's now, my line. You don't get to use that.
No, the issue is something that is difficult for the city to take a position on, in my opinion. Everybody has their personal opinion and their personal right to the vote, and I think we ought to leave it that way. We take a neutral position as a city.
Okay, very good. And I was remiss earlier before I give you my comments. The letter that Ms. Dashwood turned in was from, looks like, Grover Beach resident Savannah Cooper. So I wanted to make sure that Savannah knew that we had her letter. She is a strong supporter for Yes on Measure G. I'm not going to read the entire letter, but I wanted to make sure that was on record. So let me start by saying there's so much in Measure G that I support. I'll say, and many who don't know me, I'll just be clear, I'm a strong believer in climate change and global warming. I'm a proponent of green energy. Second, we do need to make sure we protect our water resources, and I think we all agree on that, and that's something we struggle with every day. I'm certainly opposed to fracking, and I know someone said we're not doing fracking in this county, and we certainly want to keep it that way. Not a big fan of intensification or expansion of drilling, I think, as evidenced by whether it's on land or offshore. This council had adopted a resolution basically a position on no more offshore oil well drilling, and I think we were clear on that. Here are my concerns, though. And I think people who know me, who watch me, know that I try to be fair. I try to be deliberate in my discussions. There's always trade-offs. Someone had talked about earlier, if the intent was to allow existing oil operations to continue operating, they missed the mark. I'm not going to say by a wide margin, but I do think if that was the intent, it did miss the mark, because to label existing business non-conforming does in fact start to restrict. And I'm not talking about expansion. I'm talking about if you've got an approved footprint and if you are doing ongoing maintenance, or if a well is no longer productive but you were approved to drill in a certain area, I think that's a concern. I have huge concerns regarding the legality, and I know staff talked about the taking and the taking of mineral rights, which is a very complicated subject, and I'm pretty sure, depending on if this measure is passed, there will be a lot of challenges. There will be taxpayers' dollars spent because the county will be implementing it, and we are all county taxpayers. I do And I have to say, given my past background, this does have some hints of ballot box planning, which, you know, I can't say I'm really comfortable with that because I'm actually a planner by trade. But what I will say is we always worry when there's an overreach and unintended consequences. And so while there's a ton of – the vast majority of this in this measure I can get behind, I just have that – those lingering concerns. And so when that comes up, we ask the community, how would you like to spend your money? And I think the voters will have a chance to weigh in. So with all that said, and then I left the economic impact to the end because that's not the first thing that I think of when I think of what's the fairness and what's the trade-off with this measure. But there is an impact that I want to acknowledge that there would be should we go forward with this. But, again, I think in this case we want to let the voters weigh in on this, and then the county and the cities and whoever is involved from a elected or regulatory standpoint will have to respect the wishes of the voters. So I think I'm at this point feeling like that we need to remain neutral, and certainly we'll vote however we feel when we move into, we go into the booth on election day. So I think we've heard all the comments. Who wants to try and be a brave soul and form a motion? Thank you. And typically the mayor doesn't form motions, so I want to see if there's someone else that wants to.
Sure. With the opportunity to speak first on this, I will kind of come back in and provide the opportunity for a motion. And I make a motion that, having heard both sides, understanding the passion on both sides, and realizing that it's an individual issue, I would make a recommendation that, from a city standpoint, that we remain neutral in its current form on Measure G18.
I would second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion on the actual motion? All right. So I'm not going to do a vote. I'm not going to do voice, but we're going to do a roll call. Donna, please, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
No.
And Mayor Schultz.
Yes. Okay, the motion carries 4-1 that the city council will remain neutral on Measure G. So with that, let's take a 10-minute break. Okay, we're going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting on Monday, September 17, 2018, and we had just concluded item 11, so we are now going to move on to item 12. This is information on State Proposition 10. City Manager Bronson, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. So continuing with the theme of ballot measures, what's next is information on State Proposition 10 for the council to consider. So just some background, back on August 20th, the council did take action on a number of items related to the state ballot measures. There are 11 ballot measures in total, and the council has taken positions on several of them. On August 20th, you did adopt a resolution opposing Proposition 6. This is the SB1 gas tax repeal. And you also provide direction to us to bring back resolution to support Propositions 1, 2, and 3. Proposition 1 and 2 deal with housing or homeless housing bonds. Proposition 3 is a water infrastructure bond, and the council did ultimately adopt that resolution earlier this evening. You also asked us to bring back information on Proposition 10, which enables local rent control, to consider whether you'd want to take a formal city position on this measure. I will note that the League of Cities did not take a position on Proposition 10. This initiative did not get the required two-thirds vote for the League Board to take a position on the measure. So just a little overview on Proposition 10. What it does is to repeal the so-called Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act. The proposition would allow local governments to then enact regulations on virtually all residential properties, including apartments, single-family homes, townhouses. The Costa-Hawkins Act was adopted in 1994. It precludes cities and counties from enacting rent control on all properties occupied after 1995, or February 1st, 1995, along with not allowing rent control on separate units, so meaning condominiums and townhomes. So it really restricted the ability for localities to enact rent control and kept it to essentially properties older than 1995 and just single-family homes. So that's the Costa-Hawkins Act. The act also allowed landlords to increase rent prices to market rates once a tenant moved out. So while the rent control would be in effect while the tenant was in place, once a tenant moved out, then an owner could bring it back up to market and then be capped at the rent control amount from that point forward. Before Costa-Hawkins was approved in 1995, local governments were permitted, had more flexibility to enact rent control that allowed landlords to have what's called a just and reasonable return. So there was a lot more flexibility for landlords in enacting rents at that time. I'll note that earlier this year, there was a bill in the legislature to do what this proposition is calling for, repealing Costa-Hawkins. That bill did not advance out of committee. So it was introduced, it was voted upon, it did not receive the required votes to advance out of the committee. So this proposition came about. It was put on the ballot by a coalition of various stakeholders. A yes vote on Proposition 10 essentially repeals the Costa-Hawkins Act. And then it allows local governments to then go in and enact rent control on the affected properties. A no vote keeps the Costa-Hawkins Act in place and prohibits rent control on the affected properties. I will note that this proposition is an enabling proposition. It does not require rent control. It doesn't mandate it. It just enables localities to have greater flexibility in deploying rent control practices or regulations. But localities can choose to enact rent control on properties that are older than 1995. So that is still a policy option that any locality could have. The supporters of this proposition are led by a group called the Coalition for Affordable Housing. There are a number of different groups that are behind them, including the Democratic Party, some labor groups, CTA, SEIU. Opponents are led by the Californians for Responsible Housing, Californians for Affordable Housing, and No on Prop 10. They do include the California Apartment Association, the California Rental Housing Association, various business groups. I will note, lastly, that the city does have a mobile home park conversion ordinance. Not a rent control ordinance, per se, but it's a conversion ordinance that has some stipulations around the conversion of mobile home properties. It has some relocation cost assistance and other factors as well, but again, it's not a rent control ordinance, per se, on mobile home parks. So with that, the council is asked to receive this information to consider whether you'd like to take a position on this proposition. If so, we'll seek your direction on drafting a resolution to bring it back to the council on October 1st. Be glad to take your questions and comments.
Thank you for that staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Any to my left?
Same question as last time, and sorry again, I should have asked you this today, but do you know of anyone around here, anyone else locally that's taken a position on this?
I'm not aware of any city locally that's taken a position on this.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions to my right? Okay. Barbara?
Not at this time.
Okay. I don't have any speaker request slips. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this item? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it and bring it back to the council. And just want to have some discussion, or someone want to try a motion? Mayor Pro Tem, you have some?
I was just actually going to say that the item was brought forward to us kind of at the request of Councilmember Shaw, so I was wondering if you wanted to kind of kick off the conversation, because otherwise my my perspective is going to be very similar to what we just did on the prior one, which was to remain a neutral position as a city.
All right, so I hand it off and you hand it off. All right.
I did.
So Miriam, what do you have?
Well, I had just wanted more information about it because to know what it really meant. And it seems that it would just take the decision out of the hands of the state and put it into the hands of the city as to whether or not to do it, which I like. I like local control, as we hear a lot of. But I like the idea of it because I think it might give us another tool in our toolbox of providing affordable housing, considering we're one of the only cities in the county that doesn't have an inclusionary housing ordinance. But with nobody here feeling strongly about it tonight and with no other cities around here taking a position, I don't feel strongly that it's something we need to take a position on. I was actually surprised to know that we could do we actually do have this tool in our toolbox for properties built earlier than 1995. So that it was good information to have, but I would be okay if we do want to go neutral with this.
Okay, and then and just for the record, I think we do have some limited rent control in the community, and that mostly deals with the mobile home parks. I think there's probably three of them with Sage. There's one on Grand in between 13th and 11th or whatever, and then one over near 14th and Ramona. So with that, so I'm going to try a motion on this one, and I think it'd be prudent for us if my position would be. Oh, I'm sorry, Debbie, you have more. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just a quick comment, and that is that the League of Cities, which is made up of, I think about 400 cities in the state, didn't take a position, and that influences me as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'll make a motion.
That sounds great. You have the floor.
I move that we remain neutral on this particular measure. And I'm forgetting the number of the measure.
10.
10.
Measure 10. That's easy.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to item number 13. This is the Citywide Industrial Design Guidelines. And Community Development Director Buckingham and Senior Planner Castillo.
So before you this evening is our draft industrial design guidelines for the city. So it is in your staff report, and in May 2017, the council directed staff to prepare a set of design guidelines for all of our industrial zones. This really came about from your discussion of commercial cannabis uses. So this really came about, again, as mentioned, from your commercial cannabis discussions. You also, at the time, during that council meeting, provided us as staff direction on what was considered adaptive reuse. So what that is reuse of properties and that are currently industrial uses and how to rehab them for commercial cannabis uses. So during this time period, we have reviewed a numerous amount of projects, and we have approved those projects through both the direction of the council as well as development code and general plan policy interpretation. So just a quick few images of what has been completed since that direction has been given, as well as since introduction of those commercial cannabis ordinances. The photo on your left is what is known as 805 Beach Breaks. It's over at 1053 Highland. The photo on your right is the adaptive reuse. Again, that's stemming from the policies that you had given, and as well as our development code and general plan interpretations. And this is 949 Highland. Again, picture on the left was once looking like that about a year and a half ago. Picture on your right was taken a few months ago, again, utilizing those same policy structures. So taking that policy, taking our general plan and development code, we drafted a set of design guidelines. First and foremost, it's beneficial for the applicants to have an adopted set of guidelines to articulate the council's preferred approach. So it's really identifying a desired level of design quality
throughout the city, particularly in our industrial zones. It's not intended to be mandatory, so these aren't codified, but instead it serves as a guide for our applicants. And one of the biggest things about these draft design guidelines is crafted to provide flexibility. So what that means is they allow for a property owner or applicant to really create a project that achieves their vision, and us as staff not necessarily designing a project for them. So it gives them a set of sort of tools in a box, and they can figure out how they meet those tools and then come back and let us know how that's been accomplished. So again, you've directed staff to create these guidelines, and just want to give you a look-see of where these are at. The purple area is the commercial, industrial, the coastal industrial commercial. CI is a coastal industrial, and I is industrial. So you have the purple and gray zones near our coast, and that's where these draft design guidelines would be applicable to. The guidelines themselves includes 8 sections. We did include a graphic there as for adaptive reuse. So if someone's looking to really adopt a guideline or incorporate those guidelines into their projects, they look for that symbol. And it also includes a glossary. And then, again, it's expected that applicants demonstrate how their project incorporates the guidelines. Again, this idea of it being mandatory versus demonstrative. So I'll quickly go through the draft industrial design guidelines sections. First one is site planning. So really, I'm going to give you just a quick Reader's Digest of each section. Our focus was to create a strong street presence, utilize setbacks and creativity of site planning, provide a sense of entry. So what that means is whether it's an entry for a pedestrian or a driveway approach. Incorporate low-impact development. That's been a big buzzword in our industry. But essentially what that is capturing stormwater runoff, detention, retention. And then finally, incorporating active transportation. So what that means is not just looking at how cars move in and off a site, but also how do we get bicyclists, pedestrians, and other modes of transportation to these sites in our industrial zones. The next section dealt with building design. And so really we're looking at designing our buildings for a human scale. That includes utilizing architectural features. So the Hive and 805 Beach Rakes and other of our commercial cannabis projects that have gone before both you as the City Council and the Planning Commission have really utilized wood materials and others to give sort of that three-dimensional look. It does articulate the building facade, integrating it trim and other details, and then also considering roof lines. So a lot of our older industrial, you get a nice little box-looking thing, really trying to move away from that and utilize other types of techniques to really give, again, a visual street presence as well as looking at the building design. The next section is neighborhood compatibility. Some of our industrial zones are adjacent to residential where it's directly behind through a fence or separated by a street. So we do want to take our existing residences into account, particularly when we're approving new projects or adaptive reuse of projects. So as we see these projects come in, we'd like to make sure height and visual transitions are taken into account, utilizing landscape as features, locating noise and odor-generating functions away from residences. So that's important, again, to not only to improve the quality of life of our neighborhoods, and also hopefully incorporate architecture motifs similar to the nearby residences. So the picture there at the bottom is actually one of our newer buildings here in our industrial zone. So as you can see, we as staff, as a council, these are guidelines that we're really trying to put into practice and into place already for the projects that have already come through the door. Landscaping, we do want to integrate landscaping into design. We do want to utilize drought-tolerant landscaping. And then again, going back to site planning, these all intertwine. So creating focal points not only through street presence, but also through buildings, through also landscaping as well. And then again, facilitating on-site stormwater runoff. So these intertwine site planning, landscaping, they all are interconnected in one way, shape, or form. The next section deals with walls and fences. Here we really want to upgrade our existing fences so that walls. So we want to use high quality materials, really avoid monotonous walls. So what that means is just the same wall over and over again. One, from an aesthetic standpoint, no one wants to look at the same thing over. But two, those can become easy graffiti targets. So that's one thing to always keep in mind is how we can better articulate our boundaries. And then finally, screening of mechanical and outdoor storage and fire risers. So screening is important, particularly, again, with our adaptive reuse projects that are out there where we didn't take into account mechanical systems or the location of fire risers. Or let's just take 949 Highland. They located all the electrical boxes in the front. Now you no longer see them when you pass by because those have been screened utilizing a wood type of material. The next section deals with parking and loading. Again, differentiating our pedestrian walkways. So if we do have parking lots, particularly with our newer developments, how do we separate a vehicle area from a pedestrian area? Utilizing special driveway treatments. The Grover Gardens Business Park has that, so we'd like to incorporate that into our guidelines. Minimizing curb cuts. So no one wants to see curb cuts over and over again. One, it really messes up the ADA path of travel along the sidewalk, but also it becomes a bit of a maintenance pain for the property owner, so minimizing those curb cuts. And then again, locating loading facilities at the rear of the building. The whole idea of street presence and really facilitating a better design from the street versus more of a function, put that in the rear. Signage, we do take into account we want to make signs visible to pedestrians as well as cars, utilizing durable sign material. And the last one is really integrating our signage into our building design. And that's something we're really like to start. As you know, we're hopefully bringing to this council in the near future our revised sign ordinance, but really bringing that to the forefront, not having signs sort of this last thing added piece to a project, but rather think about it ahead of time and how you integrate that sign into either a new building or a new building facade. And the final section is lighting and security. So how do we provide lighting for security purposes? And also, how do we utilize ornamental lighting on the site, incorporating light fixtures for accents? And finally, trying to utilize glare-free lighting that's what's considered dark sky compliant. So dark sky is this concept where we can actually look up, even though we live in the city, we can still see the stars. That's something that we incorporated into the draft design guidelines. So the Planning Commission did review these guidelines, and they did have a few. They are recommending approval of this. There were a few comments. One, they're requesting added guidelines that adequate parking be considered for each site. Two is a guideline pertaining to hazardous waste and storage, and this is in particular to our commercial cannabis. That's been a discussion point for our Planning Commission. And then also commenting that entries along existing street frontages may not be practical. How that is reflected is, again, up to the council. And finally, proposing adding a section prior to the glossary terms listing design issues that are to be avoided. So the Planning Commission felt it was easier if we created a page so that an applicant or developer can see right then and there what they should really avoid in design and planning their industrial buildings. So this project, from a CEQA standpoint, is not considered an action, and so therefore it's exempt from CEQA. So as with all planning projects, we need to adhere to our CEQA items. And finally, staff is recommending adopting a resolution approving a citywide industrial design guidelines as recommended by the Planning Commission. So with that, I'll open up to council for any questions.
Okay. Who's got questions?
I don't have any. I'll have comments and discussion.
Okay. Any questions?
I do have okay. Perhaps one or two. So thank you for this discussion. One of the questions that I have has to do with the Planning Commission recommendations and adding of guidelines or reviewing the items in the actual guidelines themselves. If there's a conflict between these guidelines and our planning standards, such as parking adequacy or hazardous waste per fire code or something of that nature. So how would the two get resolved?
Well, in drafting these guidelines, we purposely tried to separate code requirements and from the guidelines. So guidelines shouldn't have code requirements in them. So to answer your question, the idea of development code standards always are a requirement and come first, and then we look at these as design guidelines, and they are secondary to the code requirements. So candidly, from a staff perspective, that was a Planning Commission comment. We don't see the benefit of intermixing code requirements in the design guidelines.
Okay. I appreciate that. And then secondarily, and I didn't compare these to our existing which guidelines are, I forget the name of the subdivision down there. Grover Gardens, thank you. So how do these compare to those? Is there a significant overlap in these? It appears from my recollection that there is, but I just want to see where they diverge or where they converge.
Yeah, so we did take a look at Grover Gardens. We reviewed that, again, along with the direction given by the council. So you do see some intermingling between the two because, again, that's been a project that's been approved, been constructed, and that's something that it appears to be a sort of a good starting point. So those some items from the conditions of approval will carry over and revised into a guideline form.
And I'll just add, some wise council person pointed out in this discussion, why are we applying those standards for 15 lots on Huston and not applying those standards throughout the industrial area? And hence, that's part of the genesis and the council giving us the direction.
Okay, very good. So first, let me just say, nice job in putting together the design guidelines. Very good job in delivering the PowerPoint. I think you hit on all the salient points, and like the fact that we're talking about these being guidelines. I think, Bruce, you may have just touched on this because I think there is certainly some areas where we might want to break it out and it's codified. In particular, I'm thinking of, I know screening of mechanical equipment is probably already in code, but screening of outdoor storage materials is probably something we need to take a look at. And I could tell you there's a living and breathing example on Farrell Road, sort of over near 4th and 6th, in which there looks like there's a landscape company. They are starting to store things, and it's very visible through a chain link fence. So I think the public really would like to make sure that, to the degree that we allow businesses to operate, anything that's stored from, and it's visible from a public way, we really need to make sure that's a mandatory thing. I would also say I really like the idea of the walls and getting away from precision blocks. I think basically if you're talking about a split face or cobblestone, I mean, you can leave that up to certainly the applicant. But I think, yeah, anything that's monotonous, that is a graffiti trap, we certainly want to guide people away from that. So I do want to say, are you plan on having more photos of what are appropriate design, landscaping, and signage ultimately in the document?
Well, they are drafts, so if you are directing staff to add additional photos of examples, we most certainly could accommodate that.
Okay. So you are open to that. Then I saw you talking about the commission was talking about appropriate parking. Certainly that's a code requirement, but I think looking at parking lot, breaking up the parking lots either with shading so that we don't have this sea of asphalt. And I know that's something you guys are all cognizant and aware of. I didn't know if the commission had that discussion at their meeting.
No, they didn't get into detail of that. Of course, so many of our parking lots are smaller and are almost broken up just on the fact that they are so small. But I think, again, that's for planners, that's an obvious one when you have large expanses of asphalt. And in our code, in our landscape section, it does talk about breaking up parking lots by having landscape fingers and the other tools that we use as planners to avoid those things.
Okay, and then finally, and I know we want this to be guidelines, but obviously, as you know, it's always helpful for staff to do its job and the commission and council ultimately do their jobs. I was trying to think of if there was ever an example in which, if you're not going to codify it, is there a way to incentivize something like this to say, in exchange for good design, you know, where are some ways, places where we can be a little more flexible in the standards and whatnot? I don't know if you guys seen anything like that?
In our plan development overlay, we don't have an incentive like that as currently in the code. That's one of the times that you will see, of course, codification is if you meet these standards, you can get, or you exceed the standards, you get some kind of an exception.
Exactly.
But currently, we don't have anything in the code that would allow for that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. But again, excellent work. Good job. So with that, let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone that would like to address this item.
First of all, I too would like to commend the planning department for an excellent job. And when we are talking about adequate parking, I would like to include the caveat for handicap parking as well, for obvious reasons. But especially in the cannabis industry, oftentimes those who have some handicap are also users. And so this would be, I think, even more important. And the last thing I wanted to share was a photo that I took 10 days ago. I'm sorry that I only have one, so I will pass it around starting here. And I think you'll be able to identify where it is. I just want to make sure it's not an acceptable sign.
Thank you, Sharon. Okay, seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. Agreed. All right. So we're... That's a very good photo, and actually that's probably something we'll have to take up when we... when the discussion of signs are taken up, because I think not just that one, there are other locations in which folks have put banners up in lieu of a more permanent sign. I think we've seen some other locations as well. So anyway, what's the pleasure of this council? Staff, maybe just restate what your recommendation is.
So Planning Commission is recommending that the council adopt a resolution approving a citywide industrial design guidelines, again, as recommended by the Planning Commission.
And staff concurs with that.
That is correct.
Very good.
I would agree with that. The only thing I didn't know if we should go through or address was the Planning Commission's specific recommendations, because as far as I'm concerned, they are kind of the experts, more than myself. So I didn't know if we wanted to run through those and see if we should add or subtract, but I just want to say this looks great, and I can't wait till every building in the industrial zone looks like this. I think the photos were super helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, I tend to agree, but I think staff did kind of address them kind of globally, but I'm more than happy to go through them individually if it's...
Well, I think, okay, maybe to help us along. Bruce, you want to set that?
I was just going to say, I mean, the Planning Commission recommendation was to adopt the guidelines and include their comments, so it would be helpful if the council can determine which of those comments you would like to see included or excluded.
Okay, so maybe the top two we can deal with quickly. I mean, the top one is it's a code requirement.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a code requirement that they meet minimum parking, and they can always require more parking. So I don't really see the need to add more to be redundant. The second one is guideline pertaining to hazardous waste, and that's probably going to fall more in line with screening of some of these facilities and how they're designed and things of that nature. So I don't know if there's a way to add some wording or sentence, but anyone else on that one?
Maybe thinking along those same lines, again, in the landscaping or in the fences section to say, maybe it's not addressing specifically hazardous waste, but just like you said, screening of externally visible materials from public rights of way or something of that nature. So perhaps, though, the guidelines pertaining to hazardous waste, if that's a... concern or an homage to quantities and so forth. I think that goes back to either the building code or the fire code. So not sure where the Planning Commission was specifically going with that particular comments?
Yeah, Council, if I could interject on that. I'm really a little somewhat confused as to what item number two represents. Hazardous waste and the disposal of that is a subject of state regulatory authority under DTSC and also under the RWQCB to the extent that it has any potential impact to the groundwater. We have no jurisdiction in that area. So I'm not really quite sure what they're wanting us to address. I know that you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but to the extent that there's any waste that would have potential contamination of groundwater, RWQCB permits that. And so part of the permitting process of each of the cannabis industries, they're going through that permitting process already. And I agree with the mayor in the context of parking, that's already contained within the code. These guidelines can't modify or amend that. To the extent the city wishes to amend that in any given entitlement, they need a variance to do that. So
I think just in looking back at the staff report, made it a little more detailed. I think the Planning Commission was looking at the just to remind people to look at the adequacy of parking early in the design process. I think that's all they meant there. And then as far as the hazardous waste, just whether to store it inside the building or out in an, or outside. But they're just talking about cannabis waste be stored inside or secured. But that's probably part of our cannabis ordinances already. So
that
I don't.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't think. All right. So, yeah.
And then is three just more advisory?
Yes, three was a comment made by a planning commissioner, whether it's practical or not. And it's a valid point. We do have a lot of existing buildings that are close to the street frontage. You know, is it and can we really expect that to be practical? The answer is yes and no. Again, these are guidelines. So it's you got to shoot for something. So especially, particularly in a new building design, having that street presence is a key guideline. Even though we do have not very many vacant lots of industrial left, we do have some. And so having that type of guideline, and also if someone wants to start over from scratch, having that same guideline in particular would be very valuable.
Okay.
The last one, issues to be avoided, design issues to be avoided. Since this is a guideline, I think being really specific about this is not allowed, that's not allowed, needs to be done on a single issue, you know, at a time with the process instead of being a guideline is don't do these things.
No, that's a good point. And I can think of five things off the top of my head that I would say to avoid, but probably all of us would have different ones. Chain link fence. Chain link fence. I don't know. Ugly, you know, non-native plants that are just sprawl and pointy and you can't walk through them. You know, I mean, the garbage out front, storing your junk out front. rusty cars of all kinds that do not operate. But I mean,
so
I think we probably that might be getting too much into it. I think you're right.
I think you just described property maintenance standards, which should be something that to discuss.
This is why I leave it to the Planning Commission.
Debbie, you're awfully quiet.
Yeah, I am not going to comment on this because I live fairly near the industrial zone, so I'm going to abstain from the vote, and I'm not wanting to influence it in any way.
Okay. So I think with the I tend to agree with Barbara. I try to make sure we do things that are positive, but to the extent that if there are certain opportunities to say, recommend this, not that.
Yeah.
As opposed to say this is what's void, I think maybe there's an opportunity. I don't know.
To me, that's more applicable to the sign ordinance rather than the buildings themselves.
So, Bruce, you have something? Or
I was just going to add, I mean, I think the Planning Commission was looking for some kind of ease of use for the user, and we will develop a checklist that will actually be part of the packet for applicants. So we will provide them a guide to being successful. But I guess on one hand, there are avoids that are intermixed within these guidelines. And the purpose is we really want the applicants to go through and read everything in these guidelines, or else they really don't understand the perspective. So
exactly.
While it's great to pull them out, we like the idea of kind of forcing the issue of let's read these and understand the direction that the city wants to go.
Okay. So I would also say we're not certainly dictating an architectural style. We're just saying these are guidelines, and you'll have good examples of I think, adaptive reuse, I think, in your presentation. You pointed out some of them, and I think the building on Rockaway and South 4th became easily the, I'm just saying, nicest building once it was completed. So, I mean, if we can get something, I'm sure we're not going to get something like that on everything, but something close would be, would certainly help enhance the industrial areas in the mm-hmm. community. So I feel like in that conversation we've discussed what the commission had recommended, those that we can do something about, those that are already addressed through ordinances or fall under a different regulatory agency. So anyway. Where were we? We needed a recommendation.
We need a motion.
A motion.
So just before we go in that direction, just one last question. There's in the staff report itself, there was a site planning section number 10 commented that it would be beneficial to define pedestrian environments. So was that something that we needed to kind of blend into here, or is that an architect will know what that means, an engineer will know what that means?
It's a guideline. And interpret the way you want to.
Well, you showed a good example. I would say the Costco and Slow's a really good example. In a sea of parking, I think they've got designated walkway. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are some good examples.
Right. It really is stepping. I mean, I can tell you what I think is a pedestrian environment, one that's lined with trees, that has pavers, that differentiates between the street or the driveway. That to me is with an arbor on it. That to me is very inviting. Conversely, that could be different to you. But again, we want to have flexibility. So have the applicant developer tell us what they think that environment's going to be like, and we'll review and leave it up to you, the decision makers, to make the final decision.
Well, I think it looks, they did a great job. And you know, this is typically an area I'd be very particular and picky, but I think staff did an excellent job, and certainly think we should move forward. And again, guidelines, it's a dynamic document, so as it starts to get applied, you can always make adjustments as needed. But let's start so that we can give people at least an idea of what the community is looking for, and the council certainly would support.
Right. So again, this is a start. It gives our applicants, our designers, a place to start with, and this is just particularly to the industrial zone. Mm-hmm. If the council wants to go another direction in the future, they most certainly can do that. But this is an example of what staff can produce. Yeah.
So with that in mind, I will go ahead and make a motion that we adopt the resolution approving the citywide industrial design guidelines as recommended by the Planning Commission.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion on that.
Actually, just one little bit of discussion. And I just it's more to reiterate the fact that these are guidelines, and obviously our design community appreciates, I think, the consistency that we always attempt to strive for. And I think that's one of the goals of these guidelines, in my opinion, is to provide that consistency to the design community and provide either the Planning Commission or staff the opportunity to move forward with prudent planning.
Very good. There's a motion. There's a second. Let's do a roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
I'm going to abstain.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
And Mayor Schultz.
Yes. Motion carries on 401. So with that, I believe we had one item that was pulled from consent. This is item number 8. And this is a police department audit review implementation work plan. And Chief Peters, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. And I bring before you tonight the police department audit review and implementation work plan. On July 9th, the council had received a comprehensive review of the police department and operations that were going on at the police department. And that review identified 37 key recommendations for the police department to achieve in order to improve services. And those recommendations were spread out over a couple of years in order for us to achieve them all. These recommendations will help provide a roadmap for continually improving law enforcement services to the community. And of the 37 recommendations that we had, they were broken down a little further by staff into four categories. One of the categories was operation, the second was management and leadership, the third being personnel, and the fourth one being budgetary. A large portion of these 37 recommendations actually have been underway since the report was provided to staff, and about 10 of the recommendations have been achieved already. Some of these recommendations, especially in the operational area, that have been achieved were reviewing the call volume and maximizing staffing based on call volume. That is an ongoing review that is done every quarter so that we can stay on top of it as the volumes change. Adjusting the work schedule for commanders to allow for more supervision. They were on a 410 plan. They went to a 980 plan, and it actually spreads out that one of them is here every Friday. And so there's a for 5 days a week, there's a clear supervision within the office as well. Providing more information on our website regarding the community partnership program. We did update the website recently, and it does have the contact information for the officers that are in charge of the specific areas. Announcing the Coffee with the Cop dates through the Chamber of Commerce in partnership with their members so that further word and experience can get out, and then we can share those great events with more members of the public. And one of the other big key items that was completed recently was the property room remodel and audit. This was an $85,000 remodel that was mostly funded by grant funds, and that remodel has been completed. The audit is in its final draft. It is actually sitting on my desk for review, but the audit is actually been completed and is in its final printed review. Some of the upcoming items that we are looking forward to completing is a change in recording of all citizen complaints, regardless of the severity. Currently, some of the complaints can get handled at the lowest level possible, the supervisor on the street, and those, though handled in the field, aren't necessarily always documented back at the office. There's more. There's new software that we're going to be putting into place in January that will actually allow for the recording of all the complaints across the board, no matter what the level of severity is. Improving the programs to handle use of force reporting and detective case log management with the district attorney. We are currently speaking with the district attorney on their case management software. They are going through an update of their own software right now, and so as soon as their update is available, and we can review and see how we can utilize that software to better transmit reports to them, we will certainly do so. And the use of force reporting, again, a new software program goes into effect in January, and that software program will actually be able to track the use of force reporting in comparison to what the auditors determined as show of force versus use of force. And it'll actually help break that down and identify that better, so when we report it to the Department of Justice, it's consistent with other agencies in the state. The other items that we have that will be coming forward will be updating of the job descriptions. Several of the job descriptions within the police department just need to be modernized, change some of the language, and really simple fixes. So we're working with the Human Resources Department to actually accomplish that in the near future. Some of the very good things that have come out of it that have been accomplished already and with the help of the council and the direction that you've given us is improving the hiring incentive program that we established back in 2015. And this year, you folks did that for us. It made us even more competitive in the marketplace to attract new employees. We do have a few vacancies right now under the police officer rank, and I'm pleased to announce that we have multiple candidates going through the hiring process right now and the backgrounding process. So things are looking better on that end, and hopefully we can be successful with filling the vacancies as quickly as possible. So the remaining items that were on the list, quite a few of them have budgetary implications, and those items will, in particular, like increased staffing that the auditors call for over a multi-year period, those items obviously will be, you know, brought up during discussions in the future, and you folks, along with the staff input that we provide to you, will be able to help make those decisions on how those resources are spent. So at this point, we're just asking that you approve the implementation plan that we have listed here tonight, and I'll free for any questions.
Thank you, Chief, for that report. Let's see if there's any questions. Any questions to my right?
I have a specific question, if I might. And the Chief, as I've been out in the community, I've heard a, and I think it goes under your software changes. So with regards to, and can you give an update on what changes have been made to our 72-hour on-street parking implementation, and how that may affect someone whose vehicle may have typically been left there previously, but if a complaint comes in, what process does that go through now? And again, I think if I recall having conversations with you, it has to do with our software that's been incorporated as part of this. So if you could kind of elaborate on that, that'd be great.
Yeah, actually, the 72-hour program that we, the software, the update that we did, actually went into place a couple of years ago, actually about late 2015. And what we found is years prior, the 72 hours, the officers would go out, they would make note if an individual in the neighborhood called in a complaint about a vehicle that was left abandoned on their roadway or parked over something they didn't recognize. The officers would go out, mark the vehicle with chalk on the tires, notate the date and time, leave a notice on the vehicle on the window, and then they would return to the station and make a log, a note in a paper log. Sometimes those paper logs were not picked up every day, and so vehicles would be there 5, 6, 7 days, and we'd have multiple callbacks and say, hey, this car is still here. So back in late 2015, we did implement a program where our CAD system in the dispatch center actually will mark the date and time with the officer as they go out and acknowledge it on the radio and they put it in the computer system in the car. It'll actually notify the dispatch center 73 hours later that this vehicle needs attention. And one of the things we don't do, because of part of our tow agreements that we have with the multiple tow companies, is we don't do the 72-hour removal on after hours, after 5 p.m., and we don't do them on the weekends or on a holiday, because that's part of the tow agreements and their personnel need to have those times off. So it's done during the business day, and that gives the people who own the vehicle, who have left it there unattended for 72-plus hours, time to remove the vehicle, but it also has automated the system that has allowed us to go back in a quicker fashion, you know, minus the holidays and so forth, and remove those vehicles if they are abandoned.
And so, and what do you think that's led to from an efficiency improvement standpoint, just from your staff?
Well, efficiency-wise, it has allowed us to address those neighborhood concerns that have been brought to our attention a little bit sooner. I will tell you that in the last 4 or 5 years, the number of 72-hour calls that we have received have declined, and that's because there's actually a lot less abandoned or improperly stored vehicles on the roadway. We have been able to share that message out multiple times on social media and let people know that they need to take care of their vehicles. So the call volume has gone down in that area, but the efficiency is that now we're addressing the calls in a more systematic way where it's consistently being addressed in a timely fashion, and it's not waiting for, you know, 6, 7, or 8 days later.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to go down that specific path.
Okay. Barbara, you have anything?
No.
Okay, thank you. To my left.
No questions, just
thank
comments.
You.
Okay, so Chief, you were just touting a nice, a big remodel project. So when is there going to be a tour? When is the council and the folks in this community who pay for that going to get a chance to go see what has been installed?
Well, we do have plenty of before and after photos that we can definitely share. This is a highly sensitive area, so tours are one-on-one generally, or with a group that is escorted by police officers and the property technician. The tours are not open to the public. They do occasionally get viewed by the grand jury, but they have, okay, you know, standing to be in that room.
Okay, so let me be more specific. When is the council going to get to see this remodel?
At any time.
Thank you.
Yeah. just call me and we'll schedule it.
We will work all with right. you to schedule it.
I was trying to be diplomatic, but I'm not very good at that, so I'll be more direct. Chief, the dispatch center, so what's the future of that? I know that with the impending Five Cities Fire Authority going elsewhere, you know, are there going to be opportunities for efficiency with our system? Because I know that one of the things you've identified here is getting more sworn officers, but I'm just trying to see if there are opportunities for some reorganization in the very near future.
Well, what we recently have done, and in fact, the one of the companies is here finishing up a complete upgrade of the dispatch center. Right now, the radio system is being completely upgraded, and the radio consoles that are at the dispatch counters. So everything has been updated. The 911 lines they were updated just about 2 months ago. Computers are being updated. Radios are being updated. So antennas have been updated. So our dispatch center is actually updated for at least 6 to 8 years out. So we're pretty good and looking good in the future. We don't have any needs or updates that need to come forward in that respect. Five Cities Fire Authority is transitioning over to the CAL FIRE dispatching, and that's a program that a lot of agencies in the county are looking at, including San Luis Obispo. And it is to get the fire emergency medical dispatching all under one roof so it can be shared. For us, what we're reutilizing some of the time the dispatchers have is recently we just went to another software program that is helping to add time that the officers are on the street. It's report dictation. So the officers are actually going to be in the next couple of weeks rolling out a face page report. They're going to be completing documents in the field. And they have smartphones now in each of the cars that they actually will just record their report into the smartphone. It gets transmitted to dictationist company, and it comes back to us within about a half hour to 3 hours, depending on the length. And so the dispatch center is actually going to be doing all the data entry of those reports. And what we have found is just in the report dictation, the first month of the study that we did in the new software, it saved 13 hours of report writing time per week. So that's one whole shift additional that an officer was out on the street because of the use of technology. And so that's part of that technology is going to be applied in the dispatch center. As fire transitions away, dispatch center will absorb a lot more responsibilities in the data entry, which will allow the officers to be on the street longer.
Great.
And if I can just add to that, just also offer maybe a broader take is, in addition to those savings, I think across the county there is an effort to look more regionally at dispatch as a whole. There are a number of different efforts that are currently underway or studies that are being taken by the sheriff's office, by the city of San Luis Obispo, even here in South County. So I think we see this growing trend towards greater regionalization of dispatch. It's not going to happen in the short term. It's really more of a next few years type of endeavor, given the complexities of the system, the technology, the staffing, the different communities. But we are engaged in those conversations. I'll credit the chief for being at the table, talking to his fellow chiefs across the county. And that is a trend that we will be part of as this goes forward.
Okay. And then I see number 26, and I want to be very careful every time we start talking about a governmental agency acquiring property, the owners or others are listening, and it affects the market value. But I was just kind of curious how this acquiring the properties of 702 and 750 West Grand for city facilities expansion. Was a thought on that just for PD or for other city facilities?
The thought was for other facilities, including City Hall and the police department.
Yes.
All right. We'll talk more. Sounds good. And then finally, and this is not a, well, I'm just going to put this, I'm just going to say this because I have to, given as I'm on the downside of my tenure in this position, I will say one of the things that it's pretty clear we're not going to get to is emergency response training, including elected officials. I know we've been asking about this for several years, so I would still encourage that you work with Five Cities Fire Authority or whomever, because knock on wood, we have not had an emergency, but, you know, we want to make sure that we have training that if something were to occur, the folks who sit at this dais are the representative of the people in this community, and they're going to want to hear from the mayor and others, and we need to really bridge that gap. You know, like I said, I was fortunate to work for a company who trained me in crisis communications, but it's something that I still feel there's a gap. City manager.
Absolutely, and I will say that in part due to the council's interest in this, we have worked with the Five Cities Fire Authority and other chiefs around the area, and I believe a curriculum is being developed as we speak for councils to be able to have emergency training as early as January, first quarter 2019. So that curriculum is a...
So good luck. Good luck to the next mayor.
It is being put together.
Let's hope we don't have an emergency in between now and then. How's that?
Are we going to open this to the public before we start giving direction?
I'm merely inquiring. So with that, let's see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address the item before us. What the heck? You're still here.
Well, as with the Planning Commission, I want to thank the chief for an excellent report. I read it online, and I again reading it here. I think it's very reassuring to know, for the public to know, exactly how our police department is operating.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that.
You bet. Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to close and bring it back. And if I didn't say thank you to the chief, I think you did a really good job in presenting this information, and that was the reason I pulled it for the community to hear that, and I was still asking questions. So anyway, I think at this point, if there's any other discussion, someone want to try a motion on this item?
I just wanted to say thank you, especially to the sergeants, because they changed their schedules. It pretty sounds like the drop of a hat, so pass my thanks to them, and I'm not at all surprised that you've implemented almost all of it, because that's how you guys roll. So thank you.
Okay.
So I'll move acceptance. I move acceptance of is that what we're looking for?
I guess they're saying approve the implementation plan. Is that what you're looking for? There's no resolution tied to this, correct?
There's no resolution. It's just to provide policy approval behind how we intend to implement this plan.
Did you want to add some emergency response language to that?
I was just asking a question.
Well, I agree with you on
I think maybe it should be a bigger discussion.
Okay.
With fire involved.
Part of our goals, anyway, is safety. Okay.
Exactly.
So, I move that we approve the what is this called the
implementation plan.
Implementation plan.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion on that motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay. Thank you, Chief. With that, let's move into council committee reports. Does anyone have any reports that they'd like to give tonight? No?
Just briefly, the Water Resources Advisory Council, otherwise known as the RAC, met earlier this month, and Lopez is getting lower. We haven't had much rain this year, and so just a word to the wise. I think we all are aware of that, but I wanted to raise that again. The stormwater projects are becoming ever more important, not just stormwater because we're not having many storms, but irrigation runoff. There are things that we can recapture still.
Okay, very good. Good information. Thank you.
Wanted to give a quick report from the League conference. I thought it was a good conference, and as our Channel County's division president, I want to thank everyone who was able to attend our reception for everyone within the League, within our division. I want to thank Councilmember Lee, who helped me check people in, and City Manager Bronson kind of stepping in.
Well, I'm glad you see you survived that.
Yeah, well, we're all volunteers at heart, so we just checked everyone in.
Oh, no, we're volunteers.
Not a fancy thing. So, but it was just good. It's always good to meet with everyone from our division, from Paso to Thousand Oaks, and get some really good ideas. So.
And I will say, let me add to that, attending the session on cannabis, I have to say that after hearing the presentation, and I think Joe Devlin from the city of Sacramento does a really good job of explaining how the city of Sacramento went about adopting its ordinances and implementing it, as well as what they're seeing, and he is really good about reporting out on that. Same with Lori Ajax, who is with the state. But I will say, listening to them talk, I would say that the staff has done a really good job of helping put together regulations and implementation, because I think I know that the Mayor Pro Tem and I attended that same session, and we look at it when they're, and we're just amazed at the things they're talking about now are the things we as a group were discussing a year or so ago. And I just say that, while we had said this is the direction we wanted to go, it's taken the work of a lot of folks to put together a successful program. And so kudos on that.
If we're reporting on the policy committee meetings, I attended the transportation committee meeting, and there was only one item of business, but that item was a proposal from the city of Santa Monica or Beverly Hills, but it wasn't just elite stuff. It was good stuff that basically the league requests that the cities request that the league start to consider some kind of a ballot measure whereby we further reinforce the fact that local decisions should remain local and should not be made by the state. And that's been an ongoing, since the late 1800s, when 120 years ago when the league was established, it's been an ongoing issue. But keep power local where we can. And interestingly enough, it doesn't necessarily directly influence only the Transportation Committee. And there was a lot of discussion around it, but there was a unanimous vote out of the Transportation Committee to ask the league to spend the time and money to research that. So I don't know how it went at the other committees, if you all voted on it, but I was amazed that it was actually unanimous.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is.
Yeah.
Well, outstanding. All right. Any council communications?
Actually, I do have just one more council committee report, and it's the Integrated Waste Management Authority, in the fact that today was a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Hitachi Zosen Inova digester project. And so they have...
Say that three times.
Exactly. So it is a state-of-the-art facility, first in the nation, that is coming forward and will be a collector of green waste as well as food waste. So those... little bins that every home got will start to make more sense as we move forward, because as of October 5th, it will be fully operational and moving forward into the implementation phase and creating methane for reuse in vehicles as well. So it's a good facility that's going to bring some level of identity to the green waste and the food waste component of statewide recycling requirements.
Okay. Very good. Council communications?
Just one for me.
Okay.
That today is Constitution Day. It is the 241st anniversary of our Constitution. And that was the time that Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. So very important.
All right.
I just have one. Friday night is the Dance in Gold event for pediatric cancer. It's at Kennedy Fitness, and it started by a Grover Beach family, the Jeffers family. So it's to raise money for pediatric cancer research, because so much of the money that goes toward cancer research, it's a tiny percentage that goes toward the children's cancer research. So it's a really fun event. You can bring kids. I brought my daughter last year. It starts at 5:30 and the dancing starts at 6. So
and where
is at that? Kennedy Fitness, okay. Right on Oak Park in Pismo. I guess it's Oak Park and James Way, right at that corner. And if you just want to go and bid on the silent auction, I'm sure they'd appreciate it. Or if you want to stay and dance, it's a really good workout.
All right. Anyone else?
I do have one thing. The 40 Prado ribbon cutting occurred late this afternoon. So we now have a state-of-the-art homeless, all things included under one roof, which will be up and running with all the patients that we can have. And following on the heels will be the next step is a detox facility that will be on the same grounds. So that was a long time in coming with the 40 Prado project.
Okay. I just have two quick items, one of which was thank you to all the community members that participated in the California Coastal Cleanup Day this past Saturday. So I got an opportunity to go out and walk the dunes and pick up litter and trash and be part of local groups that did that. So I have not heard how much we actually picked up locally, but it appears to be about 5,600 pounds of material in our region for that. So, and then the second item that I have is before we meet again, on September 26th is Empty Bowls. So it is a fundraiser for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition to provide homeless services to the South County region. It is over at St. Patrick's in Arroyo Grande, but that is next Wednesday, the September the 26th. I have tickets if you need them.
Okay, excellent. All right, I've been wondering if I should bring this up, but I'm just going to bring this up because I guess I had not. Maybe I had realized it and forgotten it, but as I understand, the city of San Luis Obispo either adopted a resolution in which they, instead of doing Columbus Day, they have a National Indigenous Peoples Day or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And just kind of curious if the council would be interested in considering something like that.
I would like to think about it and maybe see what our residents think about that.
I just want to put it out there, and it's not something that I'm pressing for and feel like we need to get it done anytime soon. But I just had heard someone make a presentation on Saturday, and it just kind of clicked and just thought, you know, we'd just put it out there and see what the council thought. And, yeah, if we can see what the community thinks. I think that works.
Mm-hmm. That works. I think that goes in line with the other organizations locally that are either addressing diversity or areas of mm-hmm. Concern of that nature in the community. So I think that would be something I'd like to hear from the community on.
Okay. City Manager, you have anything?
Yeah, just a few items. One is just to add to the league conference debrief. It was great to see such a strong presence from Grover Beach. We definitely demonstrated our support for the league for being active on a statewide level, and it really helps to further elevate and establish our brand across the state. So credit the entire council for being able to make it, along with the city attorney and myself. It was a great presence to show what we can do together. Also wanted to recognize that last week we started the train station expansion project construction. We began site clearing. We began the construction access points. So the public will see activity on this long-awaited project, and they'll see a lot of activity taking place from this point forward. So kudos to the whole team for working through a lot of details and steps to get to this point. We are moving forward with the acceptance of the $2.5 million Community Development Block Grant that the city had received, one of the few cities in California to receive our full funding from the state. We're working to get the contract from the state. Absolutely. More to come. We're working to get our contract with the state and get that in place. Once we do that, we can begin the RFP process for the administrative consultant to oversee the expenditure, and then we can actually begin moving forward with the Senior Center Feasibility Study, the
$2 million in water line improvements and to allocate the $500,000 to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition for much-needed housing assistance. So a great success overall, and we'll definitely highlight this news here going forward. Also in the context of new programs, we're excited to announce that the Boys and Girls Club Teen Program is back over at the Community Center. This pilot program last spring was very successful as a way to really tap into the Boys and Girls Club to use the Community Center facility at no cost to the city. And the Boys and Girls Club has continued this program in the fall to bring in after-school programs from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock on certain days of the week. It's a great collaboration, and kudos to our staff for reaching out and getting this established. And then lastly, as you know, the Grover Beach Cleanup Day is coming up on Saturday, October 6th. We are just finalizing the project sites as we speak, so we'll have more information to you in the community later this week about what we intend to do. But we're looking at some park cleanup, some commercial cleanup, but really a community-building event to come together and help our community.
Thank you, City Manager. City Attorney, you have anything?
Nothing this evening.
Okay, very good. And looks like we have a closed session item tonight. This is a conference of real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. Property is Assessor's Parcel Number 060-206-027. Agency negotiator is City Manager Matt Bronson, City Attorney Dave Hale. Negotiating party is Eric Hargrave, Bello Terra Services, Inc. Under negotiation is lease payment and terms of payment conditions. I have no speaker request forms from the public. And with that, we will adjourn.
However, I'm going to recuse because it's practically in my backyard.
Oh, okay. Well, you have
so
a good
I'll say
evening.
I'll say my goodbyes.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Okay, with that, we are going to recess into closed session. Thank you.